Broadcasting from high atop Rocky Road in Moab, Utah, this is KZMU News. I'm Emily Arntzen. On the program today, we have the weekly newsreel, where we check in with reporters on their latest stories from the Moab area. Today, we discuss the city's new budget, which includes plans to reinstate a property tax in Moab for the first time in 30 years. We also talk about where things stand for new hotels that were approved years ago before city and county laws restricted construction on new overnight accommodations. We finish off with an update on Utah's snowpack and what to expect this spring. Plus, a shout out to the Grand County High School boys soccer team. Sophia Fisher, reporter with the Times Independent, starts off with updates about the city's new budget.
On their April 9th meeting, the Moab City Council voted to tentatively approve their budget for next year that is set at $20.4 million in revenue and roughly an equal amount in expenditures.
What are some of the highlights from this budget?
Yeah, one of the highlights is a story we've been talking about the last couple months that I'm sure will, you know, gain speed as the year progresses, and that is the potential reinstatement of the city's property tax. Their $20.4 million budget included $600,000 in potential tax revenue that would come through, you know, if this property tax is reinstated. And as a reminder, it's been set at zero for 32 years.
Yeah. Do they have a date for when they want to reinstate that property tax?
I've heard from city officials that they're aiming for, I think, a late summer or early fall vote. And prior to that, they've said there will be engagement meetings and public hearings and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe another thing to mention about the property tax being reinstated is it says here that they anticipate about $3 million per year after this year. And new revenue. Is that worth mentioning, maybe?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's important to note that if they do reinstate a property tax, it would lead to new revenue this year and obviously every year thereafter. So, you know, city officials have spoken about how this is really important to help the city with long-ranging projects. And we actually have a related story on A3 about the city's very long list of infrastructure projects that they're looking to tackle. And, you know, as anyone knows who's driven through downtown, they're already in the middle of some of these really big projects. So I think that's kind of contributing to this conversation is that they do have these big infrastructure needs that will be ongoing for many years.
Yeah, they're doing a lot to improve parking downtown. What are some of the other infrastructure projects?
Yeah, the dispersed parking project is huge. Also, the reconstruction of part of Cane Creek Boulevard is really big. That whole area has been torn up, and they're going to do repaving and add, you know, pedestrian infrastructure and things like that. Also, there are several different sewer line replacements happening. I know there are some in the Mountain View neighborhood near Cane Creek. There's some up by Tusher, too, kind of on the east side of town. And those things, too, I feel like they make fewer headlines in the story, but those are still very real costs borne out by the city, you know, and residents, ultimately.
Yeah. What other things are in this budget that are noteworthy?
Yeah. The other noteworthy thing was a discussion about COLA, which, as folks don't know, it's the cost of living adjustment that governments often provide to employees every year to just kind of combat the changes with inflation and things like that. City Council was weighing a 3.2% COLA and generally seemed not interested in giving themselves the COLA, you know, citing things like the optics of giving themselves this theoretical pay increase in a year when they are reinstating a property tax. On that front, City Councilor Caitlin Myers was the only councilor to speak in support of giving elected officials a COLA.
All right, two budget stories in this week's paper. What else happened this week that you want to tell us about?
Yeah, I highlighted the remaining hotel rooms that are vested within the city or county but have yet to be built out.
So a couple of years ago, the city and the county put a ban on new hotel developments, overnight accommodation construction. Is that sort of what we're talking about here? So these are leftover projects that have yet to be built?
Yeah, more or less. There was a complete ban for 6 months at the city and county level while they kind of reworked their ordinance. And then the legislation that came out of that didn't completely ban overnight accommodations, but greatly restricted the process for approving new ones. But yeah, these hotel campground projects that I've highlighted were already vested, already had filed sufficient documents to be kind of grandfathered into this new program.
Okay, so they're about halfway finished with building all of these new hotels. What are some of the new hotels that are cropping up right now?
Yeah, one of the ones that actually spurred me to write this article is the new Radisson Hotel that's rising along Highway 191 south of town, kind of near the Holyoke neighborhood. That's a big one. Lionsback Resort, that will include potentially a 150-unit hotel and then 188 kind of homes that are zoned for potential uses, overnight rentals. The other really big one was called the Henry Shaw Hotel. I think it may have changed names by now. That one is vested for 222 units. It hasn't been discussed in a couple years, but the city planning director, Corey Shurtleff, told me that he's still kind of going back and forth with developers. So that one is, you know, still going to probably happen down the line, just maybe not in the near future.
Mm-hmm. And so since this is such a long process trying to get these hotels constructed, if the developers decide that they no longer want to build that hotel and they sell that property, does the zoning rights transfer to the new owner? Will they be able to build these overnight accommodations in the future?
Yeah. So what the city and county did is to create this thing called the overnight accommodations overlay, which, yeah, as you said, that overlay stays with the land. So even if a specific hotel project falls through, the underlying land is still approved for X number of hotel or campground units. Mm. So, you know, these things can last longer than any specific hotel project.
Okay. About 900 more units left to be built in Grand County for overnight accommodations. What else happened this week that you want to mention to us?
Yeah. Anyone who's glanced up to the mountains recently has seen snow starting to come down. You know, our snow pack has peaked in Utah this year, and we highlighted what kind of a snow year we had.
Yeah, how does this compare to our super wet winter last year?
It's not as good as last winter, but we are still above median statewide and in southeastern Utah for our snow water equivalent, which is really exciting.
Median is just the middle of the average. It doesn't mean that that's necessarily good, right? It's just what has been historically.
Yeah, and folks have definitely pointed out that the median that the Utah Snow Survey typically uses with these calculations, it's a 30-year median, so it goes from 1991 to 2020. You know, and folks have pointed out that that does kind of warp or shape the data, too, because, you know, those years aren't necessarily indicative of what the climate was like before those decades. So that is an important caveat to these statistics.
Right. There's been a drought for, you know, a number of years. So maybe mm-hmm. that median is below what it should be. But what else did the Utah Snow Survey report say?
Yeah, they noted that on April 1st, the state was at 132% of the 30-year median for snow water equivalent. Last year, that was 200%. So we're definitely, you know, lower than we were last year, but still above median. Mm. In southeastern Utah, we were at 141% of the 30-year median, which is great. And also our precipitation has been doing pretty well, particularly due to a pretty wet March. So Utah overall has seen 117% of its median precipitation since the water year started October 1st. Southeastern Utah was lower at 103% of median. A lot of that kind of above average or above median, those numbers, is due to a very wet March. Actually, in Moab saw 188% of median precipitation in March specifically, which is great that we had that addition.
Yeah. What does this mean practically for people? What is the summer going to look like? What's the fire season going to look like? What are the rivers going to look like?
Yeah, I do know. I spoke with Jeff Colton, who is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Grand Junction. You know, he said there are still some concerns about flooding with all of this snow that's going to be coming off our mountains. He really hopes the climate is going to kind of modulate between warm and cool over the next couple of weeks. That would really help. You know, definitely lower concerns around flooding than we had last year, but it really is very weather dependent. So you can, you know, keep an eye out for more news reports and maybe reports from the local emergency management office about this in coming weeks. So that's one mm-hmm. on-the-ground impact. Another one is Jordan Clayton at the Utah Snow Survey said that, you know, since we've had these two pretty snowy years in a row, they were actually the two snowiest consecutive years Utah has seen since 2005 and 2006. That spells really good news for some of the biggest water bodies and reservoirs in the state, you know, because the smaller reservoirs in the state are still pretty full from all the runoff we had last year. So that means more water can get sent downstream to Lake Powell, Great Salt Lake, all of these really important water bodies that are all struggling with their levels.
Yeah, you also wanted to do a quick shout out to the Grand County High School soccer team.
Yeah, the boys soccer team is having an amazing season. As of this Monday morning, they were 8-2 overall and 8-1 in their region. We have a story on them on A9 that also specifically profiles senior and striker Silver Turner, who's had a stellar season on the pitch. He's scored tons of goals. He was fourth in the state, I believe, for goals recently. And was also the state athlete of the week back in mid-March. So kudos to Silver and to the entire Grand County boys soccer team.
Sophia Fisher, reporter with the Times Independent. Find more stories at moabtimes.com. You can find the pieces that were mentioned today in the show notes on our website, kzmu.org, or wherever you listen to the KZMU News podcast. As always, thanks for tuning in and supporting KZMU, community-powered radio.